Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat, episode 154, somewhere thereabout. We are a part of the Fanside Network and presented by Manscaped. As always, Ryan is with me again. And put your hands together, ladies and gentlemen, because returning from her extended stay is Amanda. Round of applause. Hey. Round of applause. So we are back together for the first time this month. Is that right?
Sounds about right.
Sounds about right. So we're just going to roll with it. So it's been a month since we've been together. So it's been a little bit. Talk some Nats. They are damn committed to this tank. And it's pretty exciting to see a team all in on a common goal.
Like some exciting story.
Some people say, you know, you got to go all in to win a World Series. Mm-hmm. I counter that by saying you got to go all in to embrace a tank. And this team is doing that. It is commendable. It is awesome. If you drop 2 of 3 to the Pirates, you earned a top 5 spot. And that's certainly where the Nats are heading right now. But we will get to that. Amanda, fill us in. What's been going on? What's been happening?
Well, I spent a week at the beach, which was great. I actually missed you punk asses. A little bit. I haven't had anybody to talk about baseball with.
Is it lying great? Back.
she's gone
fantasy
full,
football.
She's gone full tilt, just completely like lying to appease the fans.
Yeah, I know, right? I always say I'm the homer, right? I'm the one who's always just servicing the fans to try to win the polls, which I rarely do. But did win my fantasy football matchup this week. We haven't talked about that. I'm dismayed by the lack of trash talk in our fantasy football league. I have to say,
are you talking about ours?
Yeah. The only other one I ever play is with my family. And the amount of trash talk is like legion. I'm like, nobody's saying anything in ours. It's a little bit disappointing.
Well, like I went full bit. I had the first pick of the draft for those who, well, I guess anyone outside of Half Street High Heat doesn't know. I had first pick and I told Ryan the day before the draft, I was like, if I get first pick, I'm going Austin Eckler and I'm just only going to pick Chargers players because I'm a Chargers fan. So naturally, ESPN randomizes the order. I get first pick and I was like, oh, well, here we go. So I take Austin Eckler and you know, I follow up my next like 4 or 5 picks are all Chargers players before I like really start drafting. But I don't know who was behind me. But anyways, because I started reaching on so many Chargers players, the teams behind me got so good because all the players are falling through.
Because you were, they're all like, are you serious right now? Well, mine auto drafted because I was on vacation and I couldn't do it. And normally, you know, you figure an auto draft will at least be decent. That was the worst auto draft I have ever seen in my life. I couldn't believe it when I actually logged in to go look at it.
I mean, we're an 8-team league. Like, it's never going to be that bad. But, like, right. I played Ryan this week, and Ryan freaking smacked me.
He stomped
me.
You. Yeah, it was
but
bad.
But it's like, I committed to the bit. And I as long as I don't finish in last, because, like, if I finish in last, I'm going to have to explain why I finish in last. Whereas if I just don't finish in last, I don't have to explain anything. So I'm trying
That's
to just
true. No
like,
need to explain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm just saying I expected there to be like a lot of trash talk in our group chat and there's been none. So I think we need to pick up the pace a little bit on that. That's half the fun of fantasy football is talking trash to your opponents.
Well, I know he listens to the show because he's our best friend, but Ryan and I are in a league with Matt Weirich, and that's where the majority of our trash talk and our attention has turned to because best friend of the show, Matt Weirich, he's gotten a little chummy. He's gotten a little fantasy football expert high horse on us.
So, I see.
You know, we got to put him in his place. Like Ryan's name in that league is literally better than Matt. Better than Matt NBC SW. Like, I mean, we are fully committed to that league because there's a lot on the line. I don't know what's on the line aside from bragging rights, but there's a lot on the line. So, I mean, you can have your meaningless wins in our league.
Pride's on the line.
Pride's on the line. And pride's worth a lot of money.
Exactly.
Or it's worth no money at all.
Unless you're the Nats. Unless you're the Nats, then there's pride in tanking.
Yeah, the embrace of the tank is amazing. The way they continue to find new and innovative ways to lose is amazing to me. I mean, I 2 out of 3 to the Pirates is impressive. Let us not forget that the sell-off at the trade deadline was precipitated by being swept by the Orioles. So they really, the level of bad that the Nats have become is actually sort of impressive and surprising.
I mean, that really just goes to show that this team has been all in on the tank for the whole year.
Since before they actually sold off.
Again, very commendable. But someone who's never tanking, he's always on his A game with the show. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm thriving.
That's a good answer.
How so?
I'm just thriving, man. Just living the best life. Again, last time we spoke, Amanda, I said we were in false fall. And what happened? It is 90 degrees outside. It's supposed to be like 90 degrees every day. Sucks. It's hot as hell in my room. But I mean, living my best life. Football's back. I need Lamar Jackson to score a couple of touchdowns. If not, we're going to have some issues, Lamar. Not going to do anything because, you know, you're still going to be my quarterback every week, but we're going to have some issues.
You're still doing really well, even before Lamar Jackson played this week, though, at least in our league. I don't know what's going on in the other league.
But... Well, enough, Amanda.
Not well enough. Fair enough. Who do you have in our league? You've got Russell Wilson.
Everyone doesn't matter because I got smacked.
just keep reading it. Just keep reading it.
Oh man, I love that. I don't love that the Nats are bad, but I do love being able to talk a little bit more fantasy football than we would normally get to talk. Although I'm sure someone's like contemplating turning us off right now just because
I know they're like, Jesus, nobody cares about your fantasy team. And it's true. We know it's
this true. Is true. Nobody cares about anyone's fantasy team. Like it's just kind of the way it goes, but everyone still talks about their fantasy team. So it's like, when does the cycle end?
Football is awesome. The only thing that makes football more awesome is when we can make it about ourselves.
Well, I mean, anytime anyone can make anything about themselves, they tend to do so.
That's why social media is a thing.
That's the way the world works. But speaking of someone making everything about themselves, this man goes out there every single Sunday, but football on the brain, every single fifth day, dominates and just has had quite the career, coming up on 3,000 strikeouts. He says, what's the best way to go about this? Yeah, I could just, go out there, get my 6-7 strikeouts, tip my hat, da 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 da. He says, no. Not only am I going to do that's a done deal. That's a given. I'm going to throw an immaculate inning. I'm going to take a perfect game to the eighth. Granted, he probably should have finished it, and he'll tell you that himself. But Max Scherzer hit 3,000 strikeouts in the most Max Scherzer way possible. Like, hitting 3,000 is not good enough for one Max Scherzer. He has to do it in style, and that's why we love the man. We've loved him for years. We will love him till the day he dies, and then some. Obviously, hits 3,000 strikeouts Sunday. So you're listening to this Tuesday. So, yeah, hit it Sunday with the Dodgers. I know there's a lot of comments on should have done it in the Nats cap, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, we're beyond the point. Just for Max Scherzer, for his career, obviously, we talked about on the last episode, he's a lock to be a Hall of Famer. We obviously hope he goes in as a Nat. He probably will go as a Nat. But just for his career, his peak, his dominance, let's just kind of take this quick pitch to reflect on Max Scherzer and what it means. What was your reaction to his 3,000 strikeout?
This is hard for me because we've talked about it a million times. Max Scherzer is my all-time favorite National. I love him so much. Watching him pitch has been appointment television for me for the entirety of his tenure with the Nationals. And it pains me. It hurts me in my soul that man is a Dodger now. I cannot help but be happy for him. He is terrific. He's having it. What is his ERA now? Like 102 or something since he's gone to the Dodgers.
It's insane. With the Dodgers. Yeah. It's
Dodgers.
It was 105. It was 105 before that last start.
And at his age, and everybody keeps at the beginning of every season. And I'm just as guilty of it. Like, is this the year where it all falls apart? Can he really still have it this year? I mean, he's put himself firmly back in the National League Cy Young conversation. He's amazing. I've run out of superlatives to describe Max Scherzer. I love him to pieces. I hate it that he's doing this as a Dodger, but just for him, I love it. I'm so happy and proud for him and of him.
I mean, it was just the most Max Scherzer start of all time. Just like you said, like the fact that he took a no hitter into the eighth and then Hosmer of all people broke it up. It was pretty cool to see. I mean, I'm glad he did it. Really, really has changed his entire legacy in the last several years, which I'm really happy to see. And congratulations. I mean, 3,000 is a pretty big milestone. We saw 3,000 strikeouts, 500 home runs this year. Otani's doing his thing. We've seen a lot of really, really cool milestones and achievements, and Max keeps racking them up. So I was pretty happy to see it. Don't care what uniform it was in, to be honest.
I do.
I don't at all. But yeah, I'm happy for him. It was pretty cool to see 3,000 strikeouts.
Yeah, and that's one of the ones that's so rare to see. Obviously, it's a very exclusive club. That's kind of literally the whole point of the benchmark. But just to see, obviously, Max Scherzer do it, it's not an easy thing to do. Again, obviously, but just for Max to have his career start the way it did, not that he was terrible. I mean, his career ERA are high for ERA in a season is a 4.43, which is actually like about average for the MLB. That's his career high in a season that came in 2011. That was pre-peak Max Scherzer. But to obviously be shipped off from Arizona to Detroit, obviously I think Arizona would probably want some mulligan on that one. But
so does Detroit, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, Detroit too. Like to see him reach this level of dominance, right? 2013 was probably the year that it happened. 21-3, 2.9 ERA, 32 starts, 214 innings. Like that obviously put him on the map. And then next year, did he win the Cy Young in 2013 or 2014?
The AL one?
Yeah. Was it the year before his free agency or 2 years before that?
I want to say it was 2 years before.
Okay, but anyways, like for him to burst on the scene right before free agency and then sign a record-breaking contract at the time. Obviously, there's a big question mark. We've seen, even now with the Nats, their fair share of questionable pitching contracts. They can so easily turn out poorly. And we've talked about it being the best free agent contract of all time. I don't think that's even a hot take anymore. Like, the Nats got every single penny's worth and more from that deal. He was the steady presence even when the Nats were very much not steady through the every other year. Seemingly it was the Matt Williams, the Jonathan Papelbons, the everything in between, the chokes. He was had one of the weirdest postseason performances ever with that one that inning Cubs against series. The Cubs. Ugh. Like there was so much
I hated that one.
There was so much going on with Max Scherzer, and I'm glad Ryan brought up that point. It's really been 2019, obviously, but like the last couple of years is really where he's established his legacy, and that was age 34 35, now 36, where he's really established his legacy. And even from years 28 through 33, he was damn good. That's a five, six year stretch where it's like, yeah, this guy, you know, that's the peak people are looking for Hall of Fame. You know, they typically want it to be 7 years, and Max did that. So could he just put together a couple of serviceable years to, you know, cement his likelihood to be a Hall of Famer? And then not only does he do that, he goes God level this year.
For sure.
Max Scherzer is just one of a kind. It was awesome to see.
We'll never see another one like him, I don't think.
Obviously.
And like Otani's his own thing, and he's doing something totally different than Scherzer, obviously. Like but you see one of a kind guys once in a while, and Max is definitely that.
Obviously, like, I mean, it would have been nice to see in a Nats uniform, but I'm just glad he got there. Like, there's the odds tell you he should not have gotten there. He should not have been able to sustain this level of production. Not only like his numbers, but the amount of innings pitched. He pitched over 200 innings for what, seven straight years until 2019. And he still put up 172 in 2019. And he's on pace for what, about 170 again this year.
He's like, already looks like 162 right now.
Yeah. So maybe what, two more starts, three more starts. So yeah, maybe 180 ish, which is still, that's kind of like the new 200 nowadays. It's rare starters get up there.
And at his age too, where he's it's showing that durability. But it was 2013, by the way, the first, the AL Cy Young.
Yeah.
And he was top five Cy Young voting for those seven straight years between 2013 and 2019.
Yeah. Like,
which is just insane.
I mean, everyone knows what we're saying at this point. It's kind of just like a reflection on Max Scherzer. He deserved it. He's been elite for years and years and years. And it's crazy to think that even now he's still at that level. We're still talking about, is Max Scherzer the Cy Young, which I don't think anyone could necessarily argue against. It's there. There's other competition there, certainly, but I don't think anyone would frown upon a voter casting their pick for Max Scherzer. So it's just awesome to see. Glad he got there. It's good stuff.
But, and by the way, his after yesterday's outing, well, Sunday's outing, because you guys will all be listening to this on Tuesday. His ERA so far with the Dodgers is 0.88.
That's what Ryan said earlier.
Oh, I missed that. Okay. 0.88 is just nuts. And it was only 2.76 when he was here. So even, I don't know. It's just crazy to see what he's doing. I didn't think this year was going to go the way it did for him. I mean, I figured he'd be fine, but I didn't see the, like you said, God level coming out again this year.
Yeah.
Happy for him. Sad for myself.
Yeah. And I mean, I assume he's coming back next year. We haven't heard any, you know, inklings or rumors of him contemplating retirement. I'm sure he's
he's
gonna pitch like this. He's gonna pitch till the wheels fall off, but he's at 189 career wins, so we're talking about 200 career wins next year, which obviously another big milestone for him. So we're at that point where it's just milestone season for,
it's like watching Obi at this point, where like every third game he plays there's some new milestone.
Yeah,
reaching that level. I love that man.
Yep. Good stuff. But speaking of good stuff, Ryan has got great stuff for us. We've been posting articles nonstop about all the baseball going on. I understand we're a Nats podcast, we're Nats centric, all this stuff, but it doesn't mean we can't appreciate baseball. We want to point out all the great baseball going around the league, and that's encapsulated by Ryan's Week in Review. Ryan, take it away.
September baseball is in full swing. The weekend began with unity for 9/11, and then things quickly intensified as we had cheating allegations, benches clearing, players showing each other up. The Yankees and Mets played an absolute electric series over the weekend. The Mets took 2-3 that was capped off with a three-run home run game by Francisco Lindor. That sent the Yankees to fourth place in the American League East, and they are currently one game back of the second wildcard spot. The Blue Jays took full advantage of the Yankees and Red Sox blunders this weekend, and the Blue Jays are currently the top wildcard team in the American League due to them having one less loss than the Red Sox, even though they're tied with percentage points. Vlad Jr. has a very real chance to be the first player since Miguel Cabrera to win the Triple Crown and not get a single first place MVP vote. He'll be one of the, well, let me rephrase that. He'll be the first player ever to win Triple Crown and not win the MVP. The Giants' magic number to clinch a playoff spot is 2, and the Dodgers is currently at 4. The Dodgers swept the Padres over the weekend. Max got 3,000 Ks, and the Padres are currently tied for the playoff spot. Them and the Reds are going back and forth for their entire lives. The Padres are fighting for the lives, as mentioned, and they face the Giants this week in a must-see weekday series. More must-see baseball as the Reds are continuing their hot streak, trying to get in the playoffs. They are virtually tied with the Padres. Unfortunately for the Reds, they lost 2-3 to the Cardinals over the weekend. The Brewers have the lowest division magic number, that's currently 5. Trevor Bauer is to miss the rest of the season and postseason as his leave was extended. He has a chance of pitching in 2022, though it is not confirmed if he will. To the NL East, in 5th place are the 59 and 84 Nationals. They lost 2-3 to the Pirates. Marlins are up next, and the Nats are currently being no hit through 6 innings, and the Nats elimination number is 3.
They just got their first hit, for what it's worth.
They have one hit. And 4th are the 60 and 83 Marlins. Their elimination number is 4, and they lost 2-3 against the Braves over the weekend. In 3rd place are the 72 and 72 Mets. They had an electric weekend to get back to 500. They are now 3 games back of the 2nd wildcard spot. They have a crucial series with another wildcard hopeful in the Cardinals. In 2nd place are the 72 and 71 Phillies. They dropped 3 of 4 to one of the worst road teams in the league, in the Rockies, at a horrible time. The Phillies have a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. Up next are the Cubs. In 1st place are the 76 and 66 Braves. They extended their divisional lead to 4.5 games. And I don't know what I typed here. It really stumbled me up, guys. I'm not going to lie. They're the only team in the division who can actually beat bad teams, and that's why they are currently in 1st place, because the rest of the division can't beat crap teams. Looking at the Phillies and losing to the Marlins. The Braves continue their easy stretch with a series against the Rockies before they have a crucial series with the Giants. This has been your Week in Review. Make sure you guys head on over to TeePublic to check out all of our latest merchandise and gear. Head over to TeePublic.com and search Half Street High Heat for everything we have, as we are constantly updating our site with new stuff weekly. This has been your Week in Review.
You know, you're absolutely right about the Braves being the only team in the division that can beat bad teams. And since pretty much all the teams in the division are bad, they've got a big advantage over everybody else. I feel like everybody else is just like 2 out of 3, 1 out of 3 here and there to each other. And the Braves are just whooping up on everybody else in the division. So they're obviously going to win it. And the Mets meltdown is just unbelievable. I can't believe how they were just in first place forever. It felt a lot like what the Phillies did in 2019, how they were ahead for so much of the season and then just the wheels came off towards the end. Anyway, I love seeing the Mets fall apart. And that series with the Yankees was amazing.
That was peak baseball. Like, so honestly,
fun.
I was watching that and I was like, damn, baseball really needs one of the New York teams to make the playoffs. Because like, when my team's not in it, I like the teams that are going to have rowdy fans to make it. The Blue Jays can make it just because Rogers Center, we've seen it before, is absolutely ballistic in the playoffs. I think they burned half of Toronto down when Jose Bautista hit his home run in game 5.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
The bat flip.
But like, New York teams are just different. Citi Field was unreal for a whole entire weekend of September baseball. Like, if you watch Lindor's home run, they're going nuts. There's fans on the dugouts with flags. It was just fun. Like, that was just a fun September series. Yankees Mets rivalry 100% renewed.
Oh yeah, I love seeing it. It's just so much fun, and you're right, the fans are rowdy, and that's fun to see. Especially, I can enjoy series like that where I have no dog in the fight and can just watch the baseball and enjoy it and enjoy the insanity in the stands. So that one's fun. It would be really great if one of those teams made the playoffs. I don't want it to be, well, God, I really don't want it to be either of them, because I hate them both, but it would be fun if one of them got in.
Yeah, with the Mets, it was just like, at least for me, I thought they had enough in place to withstand the inevitable ebbs and flows of the season and the valleys, which every team faces, but it seems that the Mets face more than others. And
they make their own valleys.
Right. And it just seemed like every foundational piece outside of maybe like Stroman and Alonso either struggled or got hurt. It's just like the Mets find new ways, whether it's karma or whatever. The Mets constantly find new ways. But the series was awesome. It was obviously very fitting with the September 11th tribute and everything that was evolved. I thought that was very well done. But then it was kind of right back to the action. And I don't mean to like detract from the tribute and whatnot, but these teams don't like each other, and you kind of got right back to that. And it's good for baseball, especially when it's on the center stage and that you have a bunch of eyes on it. Francisco Lindor going deep three times is the kind of storyline you need in a big event like that. Similar to how the Rays were very boring last year, but Randy Arozarena going off in the postseason was really fun to watch. Every at bat of his, it's like, oh God, is he going to go deep again? Like, baseball needs storylines like that. They need these teams, even if they aren't the best or the most exciting, which both the Yankees and Mets can be if they are playing well, but they need these storylines. And we talked about that a little bit on the last two episodes. Like, what are the storylines going to be this postseason? Like, that's something we can kind of start penciling in now with these playoff races and what teams are going to be able to pull ahead. Like Ryan just mentioned, the Red Sox and Blue Jays kind of taking advantage of the Yankees struggling. So if the Blue Jays manage to get a home playoff game, well, then all eyes are going to go to that because Roger Centers is popping and they've been waiting for the Blue Jays to get back to the postseason. And obviously now you have a young, exciting core with who should be an MVP winner in any other year, but Shohei Ohtani is just doing a generational thing. No big deal. It's just crazy to see. But speaking of doing a generational thing, no big deal. The Nats are doing a generational tank. It is awesome. Depends on your perspective, but from where I'm sitting, it is awesome because they've gone from World Series contender to top five pick contender. And that's just like, I love a team that can do both. I don't want my team to be one dimensional. And the Nats certainly are not. They proved themselves to be that.
Find you a team that can do both.
The latest stretch, they lost 2 of 3 to the Pirates. Yes, you heard that correctly. The Pirates. It's something we never would have thought would happen. You know, it might happen over the course of the season. Baseball's funky. The best teams don't always win. But if you play a 7-game series, the best team should come out on top. It's the way the playoffs work. That's why it's not a 1-game playoff for the duration of the championship or the postseason. But 2 of 3 to the Pirates is what it is. You have to give your props to the Pirates. They beat the lowly Nats. And where the Nats are, they currently have the 5th pick. It's exciting. it's weird, but
it is exciting. Is there any chance of them leapfrogging up at all at this point? Or
no,
pretty much it'd take a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's like I want them to toe that line between maintaining a top five pick, but also not losing 100 games. Like
there's just something embarrassing about that. Although I will say I appreciate the fact that right now, you know, normally if your team loses a series like 2 out of 3 to the Pirates, you're just like, you know, ducking your head in shame. But now it's just like everybody should beat the Nats right now. Like if you're not beating the Nats, what the hell's wrong with you? Yeah. This is a team in a full-on tank, in a full-on rebuild, and you know, you ought to be beating them. Although I have to say they're, you know, scrappy is an overused word, but they definitely are. I mean, the way that they're scoring more runs now than they were before the trade deadline, but the pitching is just absolutely just putrid. I mean, it's so, so bad, but I love seeing some of the fight in these younger guys and them getting these to play every day. Like it's, again, oversaid, but the wins and losses just don't matter right now. But the reps these guys are getting are so much more important than the win-loss record. So even if they lose 100, that will kind of suck, but I really just don't care.
Ryan, I don't know if you're able to look this up. Has the Nationals strikeout rate has their strikeout rate increased since the deadline, and has their walk rate decreased? Are you able to look that up off the top of your head? Or not off the top of your head, but
I know walk rate is up because Juan Soto in the second half. Strikeouts.
So the reason I asked that is because with the increased offensive numbers, and this you just heard me ask Ryan for the number, so I can't like fall back on any concrete evidence for this thought. But my thought for the offense improving is that maybe these young guys are just more likely to hack. Like they're not trying to see pitches and whatnot, and being more aggressive is rewarding them in some regard that, you know, they're putting balls in play and making things happen. Like I tell my 13U team, like, hey, you just put the ball in play, good things will happen. You kind of have that same mindset with the major league club, granted very different circumstances than the 13U team, but these young guys, like, hey, you know, but they're not up there to just walk. Like, they're trying to maintain their spot, not only for next year, but for this year. Like, there's a lot more options than there used to be. So maybe them just being a little bit more aggressive at the plate has led to some of this increased offensive output. And you still have Juan Soto, you still have Josh Bell, and they're forces to be reckoned with in any lineup, but definitely ours, considering what they're surrounded with. Like, those are the two names you circle when you face the Nats. I mean, I don't think any lineup with Alcides Escobar hitting second is all that threatening, mm-hmm. but it is what it is. But there is a reason Nats are losing. Like, these young guys, as we've talked about, some of them are struggling, and you know that's not something that's necessarily as damning as what it could have been at the beginning of the season, when, you know, the stakes were different and we're playing for something different. Now it's like we can let them work through their struggles. But are any of the struggles you're seeing offensively or defensively concerning to you? Like, I know Kyber Ruiz is still struggling, but he's still young. Like, any Josiah Gray, another one, like, he started hot and has had some rocky outings lately. Like, are any of these concern or these performance concerning to you?
So when you look at Ruiz, it is a small sample size. He's playing in his 10th game today. In the 9 games before today, he was hitting 133, 212, 167 as a Nat. He did have a pretty nice double the other day that brought in a couple of runs. He has 4 RBIs in the 9 games. When you look at his advanced metrics, his launch angle is 26.8. That's above league average. His exit velocity is 87.3. That's just below league average. His barrel percentage is 3.4. That's well below league average. That's probably the most concerning one for me. His expected batting average is below league average, but his sweet spot is fine. He's kind of just missing balls. When you look at Ruiz, he's making solid contact, but a lot of it is hitting at the end of the bat. He's getting jammed a little bit. He's just missing it. Or if he does hit it well, he's hitting it right to someone. When he first came over to the Nationals, he struggled immensely in the minors for a little bit. And then after a month or so, he started tearing it up and just was a walking home run, extra base hit. I'm not concerned at all. He's showing promise. He's showing that he has good command of the strike zone. He's a 20% strikeout rate. That's below league average. That's rather good for someone who's just coming up for the first time. If you're, you know, a rookie and you have a strikeout percentage below league average, that's fine. I'm not concerned about Ruiz. Again, things are fine. Josiah Gray, I don't think he learned from tipping pitches. I think he's still tipping pitches. It's his 10th career start. He's going to make bumps. He's going to run into hiccups along the way. That's the part of being a young pitcher. And remember, when Lucas Giolito came up for the Nats, he stunk. Like, he wasn't good, but the Nats were trying to be good, so they couldn't let him work it out and had to send him back down and eventually traded him. And then the White Sox just let the man go, and then he became good. The Nats are going to be in a similar situation where they're just going to throw Josiah Gray out there, and all of these growing pains, all of these adjustments, we're going to see at the big league level. He's going to be able to work out from the stuff. Even though he's not pitching very well these last 2 or 3 starts, those are still learning experiences for him. He's learning how to mix it up, what pitches are working the second time or third time through the lineup, what isn't working. And then that's actually have time where they can let a young pitcher just figure it out. And that is very, very invaluable. And it's going to help Gray long-term. Not concerned about Ruiz or Gray. It's just young growing pains.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I have no concerns. I mean, it's just way too early in the career for either of those guys to really worry about it. Sorry, excuse me. The ability to make those adjustments at the big league level, I feel like we don't always see that, especially with the Nats. They've been trying to contend for so long that we've basically seen them bring people up, and if they're not ready, they just send them right back down. So as Nats fans, we haven't watched people make those adjustments at the big league level in quite a while. But I think it's really, really valuable for these young players to be able to make those adjustments if you're a hitter against big league pitching, or if you're a pitcher, like, you know, if we're talking about Gray, against big league hitters. You could make those adjustments at the AAA level, but then you have to come up and have those growing pains again here. So I think given the situation for the team, it makes perfect sense to just let them work it out here. Probably next year is not going to be a contending season either, barring some totally unforeseen, you know, run that they go on. So I think this is a perfect opportunity for them to let these guys go at this level, see what they've got in them. And if, you know, late, if by middle of next year, it looks like these guys are struggling, then maybe I'll start to feel concerned. But right now it's way too early to end on a team where, you know, they've traded away a lot of the good players that you would put around them. I'm just not concerned at all.
Yeah. And this is just new for us. That's what it comes down to as fans and as people watching these games. It's just new for us to see these continued struggles, because as both of you have kind of mentioned, we obviously were playing for a lot more over the past few years. So performances like this were a setback, or not a setback, but like holding the team back, and you couldn't afford that. You had to move on. Ryan mentioned Lucas Giolito, and that's a pretty good comparison on like two opposite ends of the spectrum. Like Giolito was the best pitching or the best prospect in baseball. And the Nats couldn't afford to let him develop just because of what they're trying to compete for. And the White Sox were able to let him develop, and he's obviously flourished over there and whatnot. Not that it didn't turn out well for the Nats. They won the World Series. But with the Nats being where they are now, you can let Josiah Gray work through these struggles. We've seen it with pretty much anyone who's come up. Like, obviously, we've talked about Carter Kieburn for years, and now after, 2 years? Maybe not quite that long. Year and a half, Carter Kieburn starting to figure it out. Luis Garcia, we talked about earlier. I mean, not this episode, but earlier this season. He's been having some offensive woes, and we seems like he can be a shortstop, but there's still questions there. Like, he still has some question marks. As a whole, Josiah Gray is just the latest in that. So we have to let him work through these growing pains. And it seems like the Nats are, they're committed to him. Granted, they don't really have other options to replace him.
As opposed to,
right, you know, people like Sean Nolan. But it's just like one of those things that these type of teams go through. Like, it's new to us fans, but it's not new to the Orioles or the Royals or the Tigers or like any of these other teams that have been going through rebuilds for years. We certainly hope our rebuild doesn't last too long, but chances are it will. Like, that's just kind of the way it goes with sports. Like, these players need time to develop. Like, we're just now, after a year and a half, getting to get accustomed to Carter Kieburn as an everyday player, whereas at the beginning of the season we were banging the drum for that not to happen, and we are ready to ship him out of town. Like, you have to allow time for things to develop.
Yeah. Oh, how things have changed.
Right. And they will. but one thing will never change. We still have players like Juan Soto. Well, I can't say that will never change, because I could have said that about Bryce Harper and Anthony Rendon. But one thing that will never change for the next 3 years, at least, is we have Juan Soto. I posted an article about, you know, the awards favorites, and a lot of that was due or based on Vegas odds. I think for the NL, it is Fernando Tatis or Bryce Harper. But should, God forbid, Tatis get injured again, maybe the Phillies struggle, maybe Harper struggles, whatever, the door opens wide open. Do you think Soto has any shot at a backdoor MVP? Because he's having a really good season. It's not like he'd be undeserving.
Yeah, so when you look at his season, he's hitting .311. He has a .985 OPS. He has a 171 OPS plus, 119 walks. We all know he leads the league in that. 25 home runs, 83 RBIs. He has a nice 6 WAR. Again, that's a rather solid WAR. And then if you look at his second half, his second half on base percentage is .528. That is the 17th best on base percentage in a half in the season in MLB history. The best Juan Soto can get is third place. he's likely going to get four or five. The best he will get is third place. The Nats are absolute dog water, and that's really going to hurt some other numbers. It's Fernando Tatis and Bryce Harper. They're in the lock right now. It's going to be them too. Max Muncy is up there. Austin Riley is up there. So Juan Soto is a good MVP candidate. The Nats are going to kill him. I went back all the way to 1990 looking at the MVP winners, and I cannot find, there's maybe some in the 80s. I stopped in 1990, where both MVP teams missed the playoffs. That's going to kill the Nats. This might be the first year because the Padres and the Phillies could both miss the playoffs. We know the Angels aren't making the playoffs, so this could be the first year. But with the big push to make Tatis Jr. the face of baseball, Soto's not getting over him. Bryce Harper having one of his best seasons and being Bryce Harper, Soto's not getting over him. Max Muncy, even though his name is Max Muncy, playing on the superstar Dodgers, having the year he is, Soto has a decent chance to get over him. I don't expect it. But yeah, I expect him to finish around fourth in MVP voting at the year end.
Yeah, I don't think he'll win. I think you could make an argument to, based on his second half. But when you look at the splits between the first and second half, they're really dramatic. He's having an absolutely phenomenal performance since the All-Star break. But I think what he did before then is going to put the MVP out of reach for him this year. I mean, I think he could. Where is his batting average now? I know he's 355 in the second half because I had written that down, but
I think he's around 300.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's going to have any chance to win the batting title again, but I think MVP is probably out of reach, and barring some really like major collapse by, you know, Harper, or if Tatis gets injured again, I don't know. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to mention it just because it feels like due to the deadline and whatnot, we've kind of not we. I say we as a general
collective fan base.
Collective fan base, even though we don't care to always be associated with some of the fans and some of the takes we see. But it seems like we as a collective fan base have kind of forgotten about Juan Soto's greatness. Like, we turn to him because he's really the only thing we have right now, but that's, he shouldn't be our quote unquote last resort. Like, he is on even the best of teams, like the premier guy. So it's just worth mentioning. But another premier guy that we have right now, and he's very underrated, I've been beating this drum since before the season started. I can't believe, like, I had a favorite player that hadn't not even played a game for the Nats yet. And that's obviously Josh Bell. So he was asked about the possibility of a contract extension.
Yeah, I got the quote.
Do you have the quote?
Go ahead.
Because this is painful.
So he made his return to Pittsburgh, and he was asked, I believe by a Pittsburgh media member, if the Nats have approached him about the extension. Josh said, quote, I think they have Juan Soto to worry about right now. We'll see. I'm definitely happy here, but I'm just trying to be where my feet are and not think too far off in the future, end quote. He has one more year of arbitration, and then he hits free agency in 2023. That is a very good answer of saying that
no.
Those conversations have not happened yet at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. As soon as I read that, I was like, oh, so the Nats haven't said anything to him at all yet is what that means. And I'm sure they do have Juan Soto to worry about, but you need to get the more attainable.
Can we not multitask? Like, holy hell.
You can talk to two people at once, Mike Rizzo. Yeah, they need to do this and lock him up. Hey, obviously he struggled pretty mightily early, but he's really found his stride now. And I mean, I don't think it will be too expensive for them to extend him, at least for a couple of years. And they need to have somebody to, you know, they've got nobody else in this lineup to offer any kind of protection around Juan Soto. So yeah, they got to do it.
From a logistical standpoint, it doesn't make much sense either, because we can go down a deep dive to talk about why he's one of the most underrated first basemen in baseball, which he is. Like, he's been extremely solid and deserves an extension, but it's not like they have a first baseman in waiting. Like, right. I could see the thought process if we have a guy that's maybe 1-2 years away that really only plays first base. Right now, you have to approach next year as if we don't have the DH, even though it's likely we will have the DH, whatever. We don't have that. So it's not like Josh Bell would be blocking anyone if we extended him. Like, if we had someone, well, maybe you keep Josh Bell on his 1 year expiring deal and then flip him at the deadline, even if, you know, you find yourself semi in contention because you have that guy in the wings and maybe he's ready yet. But again, that's just all hypothetical because it ain't happening. We don't have a first base in the wing. So if you have a solution to a potential problem, why don't you just like
solve that problem,
finalize that solution, so that way you don't have a problem in the future? Like it just doesn't make sense. It seems like now would be the time to address something like that. Maybe they're waiting until the end of the season, but again, it's not like Rizzo's Rizzo's trying to pull the strings to orchestrate this last 3 weeks of the season in order to make a backdoor playoff push or anything. That ain't happening. Like, go extend your guys, and then it's just less you have to worry about. You have a ton of money coming off the books, and he wouldn't even be that expensive anyways. Like, the Juan Soto deal is obviously going to take a lot more, and it's understandable that maybe talks aren't progressing right now, or talks might not even be happening right now, because it's such a long and crazy process that's going to go into that. But with Josh Bell, it seems pretty straightforward. Like, as straightforward as it can be for, you know, a contract negotiation. Obviously none of these are exactly straightforward. There's a ton that goes into them, but just doesn't make sense to me. And his comments are just the latest in a long line of disheartening news or information regarding contract negotiations. Most recently we heard from Trey Turner and how those contract negotiations turned out, or didn't turn out, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just on and on and on. And it's also disheartening going into the offseason with this loaded crop of positional free agent talent. You can't really be excited if they're still seemingly not prioritizing positional players. So it's frustrating, but it's hard to, I guess, prioritize them too much when you have so much money invested in your starting pitching. But seemingly, at least for right now, one of those investments has hopefully turned a corner. I can't, you know, jump too far ahead.
Or at least approached a corner.
Yeah, approached a corner. You can see the corner. Patrick Corbin, another solid
outing. Patrick Corbin.
Any thought to a possible rebound in 2022?
So, looking at both starts this month, he's gone seven innings. He's given up just five runs. He has a 3.21 ERA. In the month of September. That's only two starts, but yes, he had an 8 ERA in August. He had a 7 ERA in July. He had a 3.82 in June. Look at him. And then a 5 ERA in May and a 10 ERA in April. So like, we actually have something to be excited about maybe with him. He's looked good. The Mets lineup, it's not bad. Like, the Mets lineup is, let me rephrase that. Mets lineup like isn't as good as it should be. So him going seven innings against a divisional opponent, giving up 11 hits, walking one, only giving up three runs, that's pretty good. Bend don't break the whole time. And then he mowed through the Pirates lineup. The Pirates lineup stinks, but when you're Patrick Corbin having this terrible of a year, you take anything you can get. Yeah, you're also trash. And two great outings from him is really exciting.
Yeah, I would hesitate to call an 11 hit game a great outing, but for him, for the standards he has established this year with his 5.98 ERA, which is still the worst among qualified starters, I believe it is.
I'm just gonna say it is for my narrative.
Fair enough. So yeah, it's been dreadful. It's great to see him, you know, having better outings. I hope that he can finish the year up relatively strongly, so that hopefully, at least from a mental perspective, he can go into this offseason like, I'm writing off that year and try to get back to it. This by far the worst ERA of his career. You can't even say anything about how bad he is. We've talked about it a lot already on this podcast. He's been really, really terrible, and they're going to need him to be much improved next year if they're gonna hope to have a better season. Probably next season they aren't gonna, you know, be competing for anything again anyway. But you still don't want to have the amount of money you have sunk in that guy's contract for the performances we've been getting out of him. So I am pleased to see the improvement, and hopefully we will see more of it for the rest of the season. Maybe the no pressure baseball has been good for him too.
Yeah, you can certainly hope so. If the Nats have any shot of expediting this rebuild, it hinges on Stephen Strasburg and Patrick Corbin. And right now it really hinges more on Patrick Corbin, because it's not like Strasburg's is solely performance related like Corbin's is. His is, can he get healthy, which is just obviously such a big question mark for Stras, but also just in general in any sports, like health is always going to be such a battle, but performance, like, that's on you. Like, you got paid to be this top tier right. guy, and you aren't doing it. Like, that's on you. Like, it's not even like, obviously, if you can't tell, I'm not the biggest Patrick Corbin supporter, but this doesn't even have anything to do with that. Like, you were signed to be this guy, and right now you are not being this guy, and that's on you. Like, you have to turn it around.
You're healthy, but
you or otherwise you're an albatross to this team because of your performance. Not only that, but because of your contract. Like, you have so much invested in you. There's nothing to do. Like, we just saw the same situation with Chris Davis in Baltimore, right? Granted, the Orioles weren't actively trying to contend anyways, but it literally got to the point where he retired because he said, I know I am holding this team back. Like, I am just not good. And he had
so much respect for that, by the way.
And yeah, that's a very self-aware move. And I think a lot of high profile athletes or celebrities, whoever, lack self-awareness. I think that's safe to say. So props to Chris Davis. You hope that doesn't happen to Patrick Corbin, and hopefully this is a sign of things to come, but that's really what it comes down to expedite this rebuild and get competitive again before Soto hits free agency. It's going to need to be on the back of pitching again, because obviously the lineup has a long ways to go to be elite. Whereas pitching, you can kind of see the path forward. If Corbin can rebound, if Strauss gets healthy, well, then you kind of have, like, we'll say like two pitchers that are like two or three starters, like slot in as your second or third starter. Like, that's a good start. Then maybe you find an ace in your development, or you go sign one. Then you kind of get that three-headed monster. You get the recipe going again. But that's a lot of ifs.
Isn't it crazy to think how this team for years and years has been thought of as, like, pitching is their strength, and, you know, they kind of cobble together the lineup. Like, to see how the pitching has fallen apart is just really, really dramatic. And talking about Strasburg, I mean, we go entire episodes sometimes we don't even mention Strasburg to talk about what a non-factor he's become, because he's obviously out for the season now, but we don't even know if he's going to be back next season or what he's going to be when he is. I mean, it's crazy to think how the situation with Strasburg has changed, and how with it and Corbin's struggles this year, our much, you know, vaunted pitching staff is just total garbage.
Yeah.
Without Max, of course.
I just don't think this team can really count on Stras. I'm not going to say it's a blessing that this team is not competing. Obviously, if I had it my way, this team would be competing, but
it makes it a little easier to take.
Yeah, it would be very tough to swallow if we were like on the cusp of being a legitimate contender, and the one thing weighing us down was that Strauss contract and the fact that he's not healthy. Obviously, if he's healthy, that contract's not going to be an albatross, but health is literally the only thing holding him back. And it seems to be a never ending cycle, unfortunately. So, oh God, I just took off my shoes because I was like, I'm at home. Why do I have still my shoes on? Mm-hmm. Oof. I had practice earlier today.
You need some of that shoe deodorant.
So I need some foot deodorant from our friends at Manscaped. From our friends at Manscaped. Heaters, this episode and all of our episodes are brought to you by Manscaped. And I'm going to do the gambling one again, because I won quite a bit of money over the weekend betting on my Chargers to take down the Washington football team, which they did. Shout out. I was there in the 90 degree heat. What was it? The fake fall that Ryan calls it about? A false fall? Yeah, that got me. But I do have a nice tan right now. But anyways, won quite a bit of money betting, so I'm going to do the sports gambling one again. Attention, gamblers of all shapes and sizes. Our friends at Manscaped have a can't miss bet for you today. The leaders in male grooming just launched their fourth generation performance package. The betting odds are in your favor when you use the Lawnmower 4.0 on your balls. Across the board, this is the best package to get you in the mood for whatever your gambling heart desires. Are you ready to take the leap to male grooming royalty? Well, 2 million men already have. Join the Manscaped movement by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with our promo code HSHH20. That'll get you 20% off and free shipping for your entire order. Not certain things, not everything but sale items, everything. Your entire order, add it up, do the math, take 20% off, you're good to go, because that's what our promo code and Half Street High Heat can do for you. So go to manscaped.com, use the code HSHH20, get yourself something nice. Yeah, maybe summer's winding down. Certainly not yet, because it was hot as hell again today. But even though summer's winding down, you can still treat yourself. You still want to take care of yourself. You still want to make sure you're nice and neat and ready to go for whatever comes your way. So choose Manscaped and choose Half Street High Heat as well, because you got to use our promo code. So choose us. Use HSHH20 for 20% off and free shipping. You will not regret it. Well, Amanda's back, and she's back with a nice little segment that we're going to do. Yes. This is a nice change of pace.
We're going to do a fill in the blank segment. I always find these fun because some of these are a little bit open-ended. So
it's like Mad Libs. Directions
with it. Kind of like Mad Libs.
Okay.
But depressing because it's about the Nats. Okay.
All I know, depression. My life.
First fill in the blank question.
My passion.
Your favorite acquisition from the trade deadline sell-off is?
I hate to take the easy answer, but I guess if we're just picking one prospect, mine is Josiah Gray, because it just seems like we haven't had a pitching prospect to really gush over. Like, the pitching prospects we've gotten recently have been like Eric Fetty or Will Crow.
Since Giolito, probably, really.
Right. And like, Giolito was awesome. Like, I'm not trying to discredit Giolito, but the Nats just did him so dirty. Yeah. Where, like, even for the fans that might not have been overly invested in that season, you could kind of tell they were bringing him up to showcase him for a trade. Like, there was never to it was never to have him establish himself as part of the current team or the future team. It was very clearly a showcase. Like, the fact that not only did they bring up Giolito, they brought up Reynaldo Lopez too, who was even further behind Giolito as far in terms of like how ready he would be or how ready he was at the time. They were showcasing everybody. And obviously, you know, our suspicions were confirmed when they traded them not too much longer. So having someone like Josiah Gray in that highly touted pitching prospect is just so exciting. And again, I lean pitchers because that's what I am. That's what I coach. So Josiah Gray, by far and away, it's just the most exciting thing or exciting prospect from the deadline.
I want to go Ruiz because I think his potential is going to be greater than all the other prospects. I think he'll be more important in the rebuild, but I'm gonna go Lane Thomas just because it's really funny and really random that Fair. They just pull a name out of a hat for John Lester and he's pretty decent so far. So yeah, I'm going Lane Thomas just for the pure randomness and the fact that, you know, John Lester is no longer on the team.
Yeah, you didn't have to say the best acquisition, just your favorite. So I think that's totally fair. The fact that we've said these exact words, a living, breathing human being for Lester, is given his performance up to that point.
Complete shout out to Mike Rizzo for like the buy low candidate is like a perfect exam yeah. or perfect description for
everybody.
For
that tell trade. Everybody talks about what he did to get, you know, with the Turner Scherzer trade, but that one was pure genius, right?
Like,
there.
Not only did he dump John Lester, but he found like someone, like he found a viable flyer, and it's just
yeah.
Such a great,
and he's always been pretty good at the flyers. All mm-hmm. right, next one. Josh Bell's new contract will be what?
4 years, $40 million.
With a different team years. Because the Nats won't re-sign him.
All right, I like the 4 years, $40 million. 4 years is a little bit more than I'm expecting. I'm thinking they're going to go like a 2 or 3 year extension, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
if they extend him at all.
I think it's 10 to 12 million dollar range. I think that's perfectly acceptable for someone of Josh Bell's performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I would actually like for them to lock him up if they can get him at a reasonable cost. Because
I would love it.
What if they could? They could.
He's going to be reasonable.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. With where he is currently, I think you could get him at a reasonable price. And if you can lock him up reasonably, that leaves you better able to not only deal with Juan Soto, but also to hopefully pick up some other good position players in this year's very deep free agency.
Yep.
All right, next one is the Nats starting second baseman and shortstop next year will be.
I'm going to say Luis Garcia and Marcus Semien. Okay. I would guess Garcia is probably the shortstop in that equation, but Semien.
You know what? I'm just going to rephrase on the fly here. The whole infield. Give me your infield. So obviously Bell at first.
Yeah, Bell, Semien, Garcia, keep him.
Okay.
I'm going to go Bell, Garcia, Seager, keep him.
So can we talk about Kyle Seager for a second? I don't mean to completely
Corey, just do it.
Or sorry, Corey Seager, Kyle's brother. Yeah, I don't mean to completely disrupt your segment, Amanda, but
no, do it.
I feel like Seager's one we haven't talked about a lot, but it's not because he would be a bad signing. It's just, I think it's the injury history that scares people the most. But if the Nats sign keep saying Kyle Seager, I think it's because Kyle Seager has been linked to the Nats so many times over the years. But if the Nats signed Corey Seager, like, what's your like instant reaction if he's getting the same kind of deal as these other guys?
I would like it. He's good. He's young. He does have some slight injury issues. I mean, he played 52 games in 2020, then was the absolute god in the playoffs. He's on the Dodgers. He's been there, done that. He's going to be your building block for a while because he's going to be entering his age 28 season. So you have a couple of years before he hits age 30. I would like it. I think he's good. He's a 293, 363, 495 hitter. It's a career 860 OPS. He's got 25 plus home run pop. I like it. I think he'd be a good add. Someone who's healthy, a fantastic building block, and he's a left-handed shortstop. That's kind of always unique to me.
Do we have any kind of idea what he command as far as AAV? Correa's probably getting what Lindor get AAV, like 35.
Correa got 341 over 10. I mean, sorry, Lindor got 341 over 10.
So 34. So I would assume Correa's probably there. It's 34, 35. I mean, did he win World Series MVP that year?
Who was the MVP the year the Astros won that?
I have to look it up. I want to say he did, or maybe it was someone random.
I thought it was
Yuli Gurriel.
I think it was Yuli Gurriel.
Okay. But he's World Series champion. He goes off in the playoffs, so he's going to get paid. And I think he's the youngest of the bunch. So he's probably the bar. And then everyone else falls in line. I don't think Story gets the length. I think he's going to do a 1-year prove it deal. So it comes down to like Baez and Seager for who would be the next highest in terms of AAV. I don't know. Like
30? What do you think?
Yeah, I would be excited, but definitely nervous just with the injury history. That's it. Just because if we didn't have Strauss was healthy, or if we didn't have those pitching contracts, hell yeah, take the risk. Like, you're not going to miss out unless you don't sign anyone. That's the only reason you would miss out. But it's tough because we really need a building block, and it seems like Seager's kind of the least dependable. I don't even want to say that.
Seager will get less than 30 million AAV.
Okay, that's
like he's gonna be like bearable. 28 AAV.
Okay, that's better.
Do you think maybe 2-3 years?
No, absolutely not. You're gonna have to go to
5 at least.
You're gonna have to go 6 or 7 for any of these shortstops to sign them.
Yeah, see, that does make
that's for the elite ones. Marcus Semien will probably get 4 years at most. God only knows what Javi Baez gets. He's such an interesting player, but for including Trevor Story, Correa and Seager, you're going to have to go to 6 or 7 years because the bidding war for them is going to be nuts. But you're looking at maybe one of them touching $200 million. I really don't think Correa has the best shot touching $200 million. I don't think Seager touches $200 million. Trevor Story probably gets like maybe a team goes like 215, but I don't think he goes above $200 million.
I see him taking a 1 year deal.
Someone's going to give him a nice security. I can see it.
Yeah.
He has
Seager or one of those guys. It might turn out to be like the Patrick Corbin situation where everybody was bidding for him, but the team that's willing to give him the extra year is the one who gets him.
Trevor Story has a James Harden fat suit on right now.
What are the Rockies doing that trading him? Like, the Rockies were so exciting and it seemed like they were the lovable underdogs and they just completely screwed the pooch on several occasions. But yeah, we'll see. Amanda, you can continue with your segment.
All right. I'll hand it back my to next you now. One. Okay. Fill in the blank. Strasburg's next appearance will be blank. So you could do this anywhere you want. You could describe it. You could say when. What do you think? Strasburg's next appearance will be blank.
It'll be in 2022.
I'm gonna say July 2022.
July. Okay.
I'll celebrate if he goes 5 innings.
Was that the record this year? Was that how much he pitched?
I can't even remember.
I seriously don't think he got through 5 innings this season. But
yeah, I'll say July 2022. I just don't see, even if he's not the same, even if he can't even get, if he can't scratch the surface of what he once was, I don't see him going out without at least trying. And it might be painful to watch considering who he is and who he was and what he's done. But I see him giving it all he's got in an attempt to return.
And he's going to be one of those guys who, when you talk in 20 or 30 years about who's one guy whose career you wish could have seen without injuries, he'll be on my list.
I just mentioned that last episode with Tim Lincecum.
Oh yeah. He's another one.
Yep.
He's another one. Okay. Next one. Corbin's ERA next year will be blank.
My area code 571.
473.
473. Yeah, it's funny. We actually were, this was on my list of things for this segment, but we were talking a little bit earlier about whether he's turning a corner and what his ERA is. 5.98 this year. You expect it to be better or worse? Sounds like you both are expecting a little bit better, but not a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, 5.71 would be better.
Yeah. So not a lot better.
I will buy.
All right. 5.71. And what'd you say? 4.73?
4.73.
4.73. All right. I'm going to go 4.54. It's going to be I'm hoping he'll turn it around. Maybe he'll surprise us all and get under four. That would be amazing.
He'll get DC's area code. Do a 202.
That's what I'm talking about. Let's do that.
Let's hope
it's not my area code, which is 703. Let's not do that.
I wish he got under 4 years. That's what I wish he got.
Ew. Yeah, well, that ship has sailed, unfortunately. Okay, one more. The Nats' final win-loss record for the 2021 season will be what?
They'll lose 97 games.
So that's 65 wins.
Yeah.
97. Where are we now?
Well, that's bold. Hold on. So if they win,
that's bold.
If they win 4 more games, they avoid 100 losses. So that's me saying like 8 more wins the rest of the season. I don't know if they could do that.
Yeah, I think they lose 100 games.
You mean for this year or next year?
This year.
Oh, I thought you said next year.
No, for 2021.
It's not looking good, folks.
I want to try to be optimistic. You know, I'm the homer of the bunch.
I'm going to say 63 and 99.
You think they just squeak in under the 100 loss mark?
Yeah. Right. It ain't looking good.
I'm going a big fat round 100 losses. That's my prediction. It hurts a little bit. Does. Not as much as I thought it would. It barely even hurts anymore. You just, is this what it's like to be an Orioles fan these days?
You're just numb.
Just numb. Yeah.
Well, the but Orioles have the Ravens, so that kind of helps.
That's true. We have the Washington football team. So I can't even say it without laughing.
I'm going to go on a tangent and just say the last two Washington football games I've been to, I went yesterday, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, broken hip. The last game previous to that was the Alex Smith leg injury. So I
should not be allowed to go.
I'm a curse. So if you guys ever don't like your quarterback, buy me a ticket, because then I'll take care of that for you. Yeah, I'm a facilitator. I get things done.
It's Heineke time here in Washington D.C.
Yeah, just when you think things couldn't get any worse.
I know. You know, the quarterback situation with this team is just, I don't understand why we're cursed. Since Joe Theismann, we're cursed.
Yeah, apparently. All right. Well, that does it for this episode. You guys, I mean, obviously we're going to do our one big thing. Who would we be if we didn't do our one big thing? But do you guys have anything else before we get out of here?
1 month from the day you're listening to this.
Oh my God.
Beginning of hockey season. As you can talk about football, I can talk about hockey. All right. Got my tickets. Going to see opening night against the Rangers, which is going to be awesome because there's a lot of bad blood between the Caps and Rangers right now. Cannot wait.
Maybe what's his face will be a healthy scratch again.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe so.
Amanda, your dedication to drive really far on weeknights to watch below average sports teams is really top notch.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that someone recognizes my dedication to that, because I do drive really far. It's like an hour and 30 or 40 minutes each way for me to go watch my crappy teams. So I really appreciate the recognition for that.
My one big thing, enjoy other series. There's a lot of really good baseball going on right now. Monty's been doing a great job of publishing those articles, previewing them. There's a lot of big series and a lot of really interesting storylines. The division races aren't really that great right now, except for the NL West, but the wild card races are tight and there's a lot of teams in there and they all play each other again. So there's fun playoff baseball going on, and just enjoy it. Take some time, watch it.
Yeah,
good baseball happening, just not here.
Yes, this is true. Mine was along the same vein as Ryan's. Obviously, I'm very excited football is back, but in between the days where football is not on, looking for something to watch. Oh, yeah, baseball's still on. So definitely go watch baseball. Use football to get yourself back into baseball. If maybe you checked out of the season post-deadline, that's understandable. It certainly hasn't been a ton of exciting stuff going on post-deadline. Not that there was exciting stuff going on before the deadline.
Pre-deadline.
Maybe. But, you know, if you're looking for something to watch in between football days, I understand. Go check out some of the other series, because there's a ton every single day. Excuse me. I think I swallowed a bug. there's a ton of series every single day that have major playoff implications. And if you want a little catch me up, go check out halfstreethighheat.com. Like Ryan said, Monty's been killing it. CK, Matt, they post.
And Colt, our newest writer.
And Colt, they post a bunch of series previews or recaps that kind of just give you a lay of the land on what's going on. Because obviously, I assume most of us are Nats fans. So maybe we haven't been up to date with what's going on and what's on the line with some of these other series, or haven't even maybe checked the standings recently because we don't want to see how badly the Nats are doing. I understand. Denial is a powerful thing. So if you don't know what's going on, go check out halfstreethighheat.com. A lot of great stuff coming out every single day. We're still on our hot streak, so definitely go check us out. Follow the show at Half Street High Heat. That's street with an ST. Amanda is back. You can follow her again at awhite7877. Ryan at We Are All Shaq. Myself at Nationals Ace. We appreciate it. Until next time, let's go Nats.
Let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go Nats. the early light of dawn. Well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are and bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's